This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
You're now in the Essential Zone, where we seek to be informative, inspirational, enlightening, and dynamic. But more importantly, we seek to be fair and balanced. There comes a time when the game tolerates no spectators, only players. There comes a time when we must recognize that our individual aspirations shape our collective destiny. There comes a time when getting in the game, despite the risks, despite the challenges, regardless of the cost, is simply the right thing to do. There comes a time when we must find our hearts, find our soul, and pursue our purpose for the greater good of all, for country, for humanity. There comes a time when we must manifest our true greatness. Yes, there comes a time, and that time is now. So let's get down to the essentials. The essentials. Serious radio for serious people committed to advancing the national conversation. Good evening and welcome to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. I am your host, Hubert Edwards, and as usual, we're going to have ourselves a wonderful conversation. We're asking you to join in. You can join in tonight at just about any point. We're not going to be that rigid this evening. Certainly want to hear from you. The numbers are 323-6232, 325-4259, 325-4316, and our text line 422-4796. Want you to get in on this conversation, want to hear your views, want to hear your thoughts on the topic. We have heard a number of issues reported this week, the largest of which may be the increase in electricity costs. And, you know, there have been major discussions around BPL and electricity, as one would anticipate in the instant where there has been cost increase. I personally am not getting into any discussions around the organization itself. What I'm trying to point at for the purpose of our interaction this evening is where we are as a country, where we are economically, where we are in terms of, on one hand, recognizing and appreciating that the economy is coming back, has roared back faster and more significantly than we would have anticipated 2 years ago this time. But at the same time, we are faced with some serious, significant headwinds. Internationally, almost, well, in some instance, global headwinds, international headwinds coming from specific localities. But we are also faced with some domestic headwinds. Many of these headwinds, if we analyze them carefully, and by analysis, we would necessarily need to go back 20 years, 30 years, 40 years, maybe 50 years or more. They are not circumstances created out of the doings of others, but largely because of the things that we as a country did or did not do, policies we took or did not take, actions we took or did not take. These are the things which are coming to bear, are coming to manifest at this point in time. And what is so important, what is so significant about these things? Because they always existed. They've always existed. But what is fundamental at this point in time is the issue which I keep harping on. And I will keep saying this until we no longer need to say this. The Bahamas today, the Bahamas of today is still very fortunate, is relatively rich and blessed economically, and certainly comparatively to comparing with a number of sister nations within the Caribbean, way out in front. The big challenge, though, is in this time, in this moment, the Bahamas is dealing with a set of circumstances which it has never dealt with before in from the perspective that they currently exist. What do I mean by that? The Bahamas has always had debt, and debt has always increased, is always increasing. But it has never had circumstance where the debt is at the level that it currently is. It has never had circumstances where there is a clear recognition, very, very clear recognition, and open, not just a discussion here and a discussion there, but open, unequivocal, and proactive discussions that there is a deficit in the revenue capacity of the government, i.e., we need to get to more like 25% GDP, revenue to GDP. These things have never happened before. And in, you know, if you watch movies a lot or you read certain material, you start to understand and appreciate that at some point in time in the movie, in the plot, in circumstances, in life, when you follow history, there is a coming together of a multiplicity of factors. And you start to realize that you're dealing with a very delicate and complex set of circumstances, which all need attention at the same point in time, but every single one has potentially adverse spillover effect on the others. And so as a result, we are where we are today, a country emerging from a pandemic, a country which has been dealt a significant blow, just like most other countries or all other countries, from a economic point of view, but certainly came back roaring in a big way. But even that comeback, with revenue at $2.6 billion, is going to, in the final analysis, this is my conclusion, but is going to, in the final analysis, prove to be insufficient. And why is it going to be insufficient? Because in this whole process of us building a country, running the economy, doing the things which are going to be necessary to advance the well-being, the welfare, the standard of living of the citizenry, there are some things which we just never paid sufficient attention to. We just never did, for one reason or the next, as it relates to governance and those who have the opportunity and the privilege to be in those places. No one is exempted. This is not an argument pointed in the direction of any one person. It is right across the board. There's some fundamental issues which just wasn't dealt with well. And in certain arena, time and money are often our most valuable resources. If you have little money, it's best to spend it on the thing that you need to fix early, because if you wait, when you wait, it gets more expensive. And by getting more expensive, you fail to address the issue, you're effectively mortgaging away your valuable asset of time. Time is a very valuable currency. For a number of the structural issues which are bothering the Bahamas at this point in time, we are where we are with those, largely because we have not been very timely. So this evening, I want to have a discussion around resilience. We've heard it. We've heard the use of the word. We've seen budget presentations. We have heard speeches. We've heard many perspective or many contribution in which this word is used. Economic resilience. But what exactly is economic resilience? Because often, in many instances, we're not using it in as fundamental a way as we should. Way too often, resiliency is seen as maybe a synonym for long-suffering. Like, for example, we say the Bahamian people are resilient, which simply means that persons in the Bahamas, the citizens of the Bahamas, they will go to hell and back and just keep bouncing back every single time. That is a level of resilience. And that then gets extrapolated in the economic arena. So we need to ensure that we deal with our vulnerabilities so that we can address the shocks which are coming, the economic shocks, and so we can build greater resiliency. An accurate statement, a true statement, a fundamental statement. But at the end of the day, in some of those conversations, when you listen to them very keenly, when you read between the lines, resiliency means let's make some more money. Let's get some more money in. And while money, yes, money is a part of this equation and an important measurement and benchmark in this whole discussion around resiliency, because when the rubber meets the road, resiliency is about your ability to cope with those disasters, those shocks, the vulnerabilities. But it goes beyond that. It gets to the question of how do you build an economy? How do you develop an economy which can grow and grow in an inclusive manner? Let me say that again. How do you develop an economy which has the potential to grow? And by growing, I mean relatively robustly, because the Bahamas is growing, has always been growing. For most of the years, it has grown. But not just grow, the economy must be grown in such a way that it is inclusive. So I want to take you down that path, and if you want to jump in, you want to give us a call, certainly do that. I am doing the show remotely, and so my producer is going to be sending me messages when a call comes in, and I'll be able to take that. If you send your text in, you'll be able to send those to me, and I'll be able to read them. But I want to drill down on this issue of economic resilience as it relates to, and bring it home as it relates to the Bahamas. So I did a bit of research, and I went to a couple of websites, and this one is Cardiff AC UK, on a document which is headline, Building Resilient Economies. What is economic resilience? And it says here that economic resilience include two components. Usually when you do research, you will find one document which says there are five components, one that says six. You know, these things aren't necessarily written in stone, but I like the one with two. They're easier to deal with, and sound more fundamental based on what I was looking at. So the first component it informs is the ability of an economy of households, firms, or an economy to withstand or absorb an economic shock. So firstly, the entirety of the households in the Bahamas, the companies, the businesses, or if you want to look at it, the economy as a whole, the ability that it has to withstand or absorb an economic shock, just like we saw from COVID, like we saw in 2008, like we saw in the 90s. These are economic shocks which come from largely from outside. They generated from circumstances developing outside the country. So the question is, how well can we do that? But at the heart of this discussion, this whole issue of resilience is about minimizing welfare losses. I want you to listen to that very carefully. That the issue of resilience is about minimizing welfare losses. Because as you and I know instinctively, when circumstances get challenging, like we just saw in COVID and so on and so forth, welfare is affected. And we can define welfare in any manner we choose to. But generally speaking, it's about how well you and I, the citizenry and the residents, how well are we doing? How well are the persons who are considered to be poor or within lower socioeconomic groupings, how well are they doing? How much are they losing? How much are they losing their jobs? How much can they no longer go to school to acquire education, higher learning, so on and so forth? It's really about minimizing in aggregate the losses in welfare. On the second level, which the paper says it's a little bit more dynamic, this component is a bit more dynamic, but it relates to, again, household firms or the economy as a whole, more widely looking at the economy as a whole. The ability to adapt to the changing circumstances and strengthen their ability to respond to potential future shocks. What does that mean in our circumstance? We've just gone through COVID, and we have to deal with it. We have to mop up all of the issues and the circumstances attendant thereto. We have to. But the question is, how capable will the Bahamas be? Should it be confronted with another significant future shock, maybe in the next 5 years or the next 10 years? That, my friends, that, listeners, is the real, real crux. Not the total argument. I must say that. But that is the most significant part of this whole discussion around resilience. And often when I speak or I write, if you follow me, you will hear me harping on the reforms, the need for the reforms. Because regardless of how what you want to call it, you know, you don't have to call it reforms, regardless of where we are today, having gone through the fire, through fire one, or gone through the water in the case of a hurricane like Dorian, the question is, once you pick up yourself and dust off yourself, you have been diminished, depreciated by the effect of the event. The question is, when the next one comes around, are you going to be, one, in a better position than you were right after the last one? And are you going to be strong enough? Are you going to have resilience muscle sufficient to take you through this particular crisis? Or we are going to end up with a situation where the last one knock us down, the next one knock us down further, and then the other one which come down the road is just going to kill us off. Because if we are not addressing this issue of strengthening our ability to respond to future shocks, we are going to be in problem. So how does that translate to where we are right now, right here, this very moment? If you look at the Bahamas today, this very minute, and if you're an objective, balanced individual taking into consideration all the circumstances we have been through and all of the fiscal realities that we're currently facing, you would agree with me, you must agree with me, that we are in 2022 less capable, less able of responding to a shock than we were pre-COVID. There's no question about that. And if you resist that argument, let me put it this way. Let's imagine, you know, this, God forbids, this should never happen. But let's imagine that everything that we have going right now, the level of the debt, the circumstances which are being reported in the newspaper, so on and so forth, everything exists as is. And tomorrow, we are re-experiencing COVID. I want you to reflect on that for a minute. And as I said, right, this isn't targeting any individual in governance. This is saying, how do we deal with our systems as a country? So, for example, if we were re-experiencing COVID starting tomorrow, we would necessarily be having the same conversations about not enough hospital beds, not enough capacity in the healthcare system, not enough capacity in NIB, and so on and so forth. It might be a bit of an unreasonable argument given the proximity, yeah? We just coming out of it, or we may not even be out of it totally. But I use that as an example to show you that if we were to stretch this out to 3 years, 5 years, and then re-experience the same event to the same magnitude, the question is, when tourism shut down 100%, when all of the things which were done in during COVID, minus the decisions which we would now make better based on what we have learned, in the final analysis, would the Bahamas as a country be better positioned to deal with that shock? And if that answer in that future place, in that future state, is not yes, then there's no real true resilience. We would have grown back, clawed back, but unless there's going to be some growth, some institutional deepening, some national deepening, some strengthening in industry, structural adjustment where there are bottlenecks which are restricting innovation and development within the private sector, changes where there is lack of productivity in government, so that government can become more facilitative, more nimble, more supportive to the private sector. If those things don't change and improve for the better, then you are going to have a country. You are going to be in a state where we are going to be to still be dreaming, looking for, clawing after, having a desire for resiliency. And I think that this is where the argument turns for me. The next point I'm about to make is where the arguments really, really turn. Because from the paper, it says that while our understanding of this issue of resilience usually revolve around certain assets, the nature of certain assets, and we usually think in terms of financial, we usually think in terms of physical, what, you know, buildings and so on and so forth that we have. We also think in terms of social capital. It says that there is a increasing recognition of the role of choices and the scope to make and act on choices as an influence on resilience outcomes. What does that mean? It means, therefore, that for all of the persons who have been sitting down, these academics and people who notice these things, persons who work with the IMF and the World Bank and so on and so forth, when they aggregate all of the historical knowledge, they are congealing around a consensus that the choices that we make, i.e. the policy positions, the things that we do or not do, but also importantly, very, very importantly, the scope to make and act on those choices. In other words, right now the Bahamas have a number of things that it wishes to do, which is going to make life better for the country. If you, and we can only use the benchmark or the measuring stick of the current administration in power, because nobody else can do anything. So let's go to the PLP administration and let's look at their manifesto, Blueprint for Change. If you look in that manifesto, you see a number of important and critical issues which, when addressed, is highly likely to bring positive value to the country. There's no question about that. I don't care if you like them or don't like them, you one of them or not one of them. If you are an objective person and you're willing to leave your bias in abeyance, you will come to that conclusion. Because, you know, in stark generic terms, layering it with any philosophical differences, there are some good plans there. The question, though, is that where we are as a country, the issues that we are faced currently, do we have the scope to act on those choices at this very minute? Do we have the scope to act on those choices? And the answer to that may largely be no, or not all of them, or we really have to start to cherry pick, because the resources are finite. Well, resources are always finite. Most resources are always finite, but the resources are limited. And why the resources are limited goes back to the thing that we said before. Yes, we're coming out of a pandemic. Yes, we had some issues, but at the end of the day, I want you to remember that the government took in $2.6 billion at the end of 2022, which is a record in the history of the Bahamas, but it is not adequate. We are still running deficits. The government will still have to borrow, and that circumstance of needing to borrow is complicated with this old fact that we have challenged borrowing at this point in time internationally, as it may, borrowing internationally at reasonable rates. Rates are too high. It's not prudent to do that. So that therefore limits our scope. First of all, we are limited in the fact that we have to run deficit, you know. So, but if we could borrow the money, that would free up some space to make some other choices and to do some other thing. But the extent to which we are not able to fund that slows down, curtails that, and puts us in a place where our scope diminishes. If our scope is diminishing, then the level of resiliency is likewise reducing. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is where I want us to focus our minds today. Not on, you know, some of the discussions which are having, and I don't want persons in any way think I'm making any political statements, but persons are harping on persons flying here or flying there or doing this and that, when we are effectively majoring in a number of minor issues. Not that going someplace is a minor thing, because the expectation is that when someone leave the vicinity of the Bahamas in an official capacity, they go away to seek value to bring back to the country. That is the expectation. And so the spend, all things being equal, the value coming back should outweigh the spend. But be that as it may, there are bigger, more fundamental and deep issues to be solved, which must be solved if we are going to be good for the long haul. And I think that's a good place for us to take a break. We'll take a break here. When we come back, we'll continue talking about this thing. I want you to join me, but if you don't join me, you can listen. I have a lot to say. We have a lot of material to get through. But I certainly would like your input. Because one of the things I would love for us to do this year in 2022, going in 2023, is to change the conversations. It's to stop having the conversations which are emotional, the conversations which are divisive, the conversations which are not really moving the needle forward as it relates to national development. And to start having those conversations, which even if we don't fully understand them, and I'm sitting here and I'm talking to you, I don't pretend to understand all of these things, but I learn as I go. And I'm willing and I'm brave enough to start the discussion. So even if I trip up, I'm open to be corrected. But we need to start the conversations which are going to put ourselves nationally, our national psyche, in a place where we are now starting to look for solutions. And we are starting to look for solutions of a different kind. And the reason we are looking for these solutions is because we are now starting to properly define the challenges that we have. Because there is nothing worse than solving the wrong problem. Accurate problem definition is going to be the absolutely most important starting point of any strategy to find solutions. So I want you to engage your mind in that direction. That's what we're trying to achieve here. That's what we always try to achieve here on the show. You listen to The Essential, The Reset. I'm your host, Hubert Edwards. Don't move. Come right back.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Next Level Solutions. Next Level Solutions. Solutions. At Next Level Solutions, companies and organizations to understand and strategically resolve governance, risk, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. For further details on our service offerings, visit nlsolutionsbahamas.com or call 376-8951. Next Level Solutions. practical solutions delivered.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Welcome back to The Essentials. This is Hubert Edwards. I'm your host. And we're having a conversation, or it's really up to you. You can leave this as a monologue, or we can have a conversation. I want to hear from you. 323-6232, 325-4259, 326-4316, or text line 422-4796. So we're having this conversation about how the Bahamas can develop its resiliency. Or the fact that there is a need, there is a clear need for the Bahamas to do such a thing. And where I left off in a previous segment is that we must be mindful. We have to be mindful and be very, very careful that we secure proper problem definition. So we have to step back and ask ourselves, what at a very, very, very critical level are the true problems which the country are faced with at this point in time? Tourism is percolating. I think tourism and visitor numbers are well up, robust, right across the Caribbean region. As a matter of fact, you know, I just saw a colleague of mine commenting on some numbers coming out of Jamaica, and the question is, the number is too big to be U.S. dollars, but, you know, I would reassure him that it is U.S. dollars. Tourism is a big, big business. And so it's driving the Bahamian economy. So on the revenue side, for the most part, despite the fact that we're not yet at our desired 25% revenue to GDP, but, you know, the performance up to this point is not a thing to shake a stick at. I think we are good. And if we can continue to trend in this particular direction and get better, then things are going to change positively. But the question is, how do we get better? How do we get better? How do we get there? We have to, in a very, very, very serious way, start to have the national conversation. By national, I mean all of us. You can include me if you will. All of us, all of you, we need to start to ask and answer some important question. Where exactly is the Bahamas economic situation today? Do we have what we need to sustain us going forward? And these are not negative questions at all. You know, they may be uncomfortable. They may be uncomfortable. Have we already exhausted our tax capacity, the ability to tax some more? No one wants to hear that. No one certainly in the Bahamas want to hear that. I don't want to pay any more tax myself, but at the end of the day, taxes is a part of the rent we pay to stay. On this earth, in certain localities, we enjoy a certain standard of living. We may have to be asked to pay a bit more. The questions are not negative. They may sound negative. To some persons who do not want, are going to conclude that they're negative, but they are not. The questions are the honest questions, which are going to be the starting point of finding the solution. And it's important, you know. It's important not only just some of us know and some of us understand exactly what is happening, but the next 200,000 persons over here think that, you know, things are different. No. Let's ask the questions and let's start answering them, not in a way to be critical at all, not in a way of trying to get at anybody, no got you moments, but in such a way where we start to roll back the layers in order to come to the solution. It's like taking an onion, you know, the onion have different layers. And if you have an onion which is kind of bad on the outside, if you peel it back sufficient, you're going to get to a place, not all the way down to the core, but you're going to get to a point, all things being equal, where everything is fine. That's what we're trying to do, to unpack, to unveil what the real challenges are and how we're going to fix them. The Bahamas just had a couple of things dealt its way, which will require, certainly from the policymaker's perspective, you and I, fortunately, for you and I, we can go to our bed. We should be as concerned about these things as citizens and residents. We should be. But we largely can go to our bed and leave it to the policymakers to be worried about these things. And two things happened recently. One was the relisting by the Bahamas on an adverse by the EU. These things are never, ever without challenges. They're never, ever without problems. When you find yourself on an adverse listing, it's affecting some business someplace down the road. It's affecting some customers. It's affecting somebody. So we need to be mindful of that. Always need to be mindful of that circumstance. So the question is, who is being impacted and how is that going to affect our overall financial services product? Now, as it seemed, this could be a very short-lived. It seemed to be an issue which can be resolved, or hopefully can be resolved in a very short time. That at least is the prayer. We want that to be gone. We don't want that circumstance hanging over our head. But it happened. And this is something that we have to grapple with as a country. The next thing, as reported in the newspaper, is that Moody's downgraded the Bahamas sovereign ratings again. If you go back to the previous rating and the previous discussions when Moody kind of stick their nose in the Bahamas business around budget time, which is what they do. They are there providing a service for their clients who are lenders. But sometimes they're a little bit nosy, right? But yeah, that's fine. They basically kind of foreshadow what might happen to the Bahamas and some of the risks which could be unveiled over time. And the downgrade based on the information coming out of, as reported by the Nassau Guardian, is that, and just a quick quote here, despite an ongoing economic driven primarily by tourism activity and a narrowing of the fiscal deficit. So those are two very positive things that we know are happening. One, the economy is roaring back. Tourism is at a near boiling point. well, let's hope it's not at a near boiling point. It's good enough. We want it to boil even hotter, but it's doing well. And the fact that the deficit narrowed, where we were expected to come in with a deficit of 6%, we did 4%. And we're projected to do better in this year also. That's 2022-23. Despite that, they're saying the Bahamas faces constrained funding options given elevated external borrowing costs. In layman terms, that means the Bahamas, if the Bahamas is going to borrow, it will have to pay a significant interest rate on those money. And as a result of that, that circumstance is acting as a constraint. No prudent government is going to borrow at those levels. It's going to be difficult for the government to borrow at those levels. So it's faced with elevated external borrowing costs. I believe that we have to look seriously inward. I believe that the local financial services, financial market, the local persons who have long pockets, deep pockets, need to step to the bar, need to ante up. And that's kind of you and I. If you have, you know, 1,000 year or 5,000 year, you have to buy some government stocks so that the government will have more funding coming from the domestic market. I think it's important. It's a national service in many ways. Because in the long run, if the economy gets creamed, if the economy gets more challenged, we all are going to be in the pickle. So, you know, you can't run from it. If you're domestic, you have no place to run. Certainly, if you're in the financial, of course, you can take your capital and export it by chasing foreign assets. But if you plan to stay here and operate in the domestic arena, then certainly you want to assist as best as you can in that circumstance. So the reading from the statement that Moody make is that tighter funding conditions over a prolonged period could undermine the sovereign's ability to meet external repayments. Again, I talked earlier about how we develop resiliency and the importance of having a scope to deal with the choices that we need to make. One of the choices that the government certainly have, where, you know, it's contractual, they are bound to do it, is to make repayments on their debt, the debt. The extent to which that is constrained have implications in the near to midterm. Very, very serious implications. So here is a rating agency saying to us as a country, in light of our bounce back in from a very serious pandemic, that some of the risks that we highlighted not too long ago could be manifesting themselves. This is why it's important that we pay attention to this whole idea of resiliency, because embedded in this concept is growth. And the only way, one of the only way the Bahamas is going to remove this millstone that is currently crystallizing from around its economic neck is to secure growth from someplace or to turn to austere measures. Certainly, that would be a last resort. But that's kind of the point I'm making here. That's kind of the point I'm trying to make, that we have to shift away from the minutiae and start to look at the big picture. When Moody's made the statement, it's not thinking about, you know, which country the prime minister traveled to the last time or what the size of the entourage was. These are things that locally, I think we have become overly engaged. And I'm not saying persons shouldn't discuss them. You have a right to. But we have become too enamored with having these type of a conversation, we're missing the total big picture. And the big picture is for the Bahamas at this moment is solving the issue of an external perception that we could have challenges repaying our debt. As outlined, tighter funding conditions over a prolonged period could undermine the sovereign's ability to meet external repayments, including on its international bonds. So, yeah, including on its international bonds. That's a very, very, very important statement. It's a very serious statement. It's one that we definitely have to look into. One that we just can't run away from. Because as I have said elsewhere, as I have written elsewhere, the most critical issue which this administration and any administration that would have been in power at this point in time will have to grapple with is the state of the country's debt circumstance. There's no if, no but, no suppose. The reason why that is so and will remain so that it exerts such a high level of pressure on everything else because it requires decisions which are going to, you know, do we pay the debt or do we put some money over there? We have a deficit, but we can't attract the amount of money that we need to fund it. And these are going to be very critical issues. So I want to go back to and tie in this issue of resiliency. Some information I pick up from the Georgia Tech Center for Economic Development and Research is that resiliency has three primary attributes. One is the ability to recover quickly from a shock. I think the Bahamas is demonstrating a significant amount of that ability. Not in totality from my perspective, but it is demonstrating the ability to bounce back. So there is some measure of resiliency in the country, in the economy. The second one is the ability to withstand a shock. So the ability to recover quickly after a shock, the ability to withstand the shock. We saw when we were going through COVID and the global financial crisis that our ability to withstand that was not near any desired level. We were weak. Once tourism was totally shut down, and I must be balanced in saying that's kind of unusual and extreme. But within the context of that particular shock, we weren't capable. It's a big one, it's a big doozy. But we would have failed in that regard if we look at it, the ability to withstand a shock. Smaller shocks, certainly we have been withstanding the shocks from a lot of climate events, hurricanes over the years, even the Dorian, as big as it was, historical in many regards, withstood that to a high level. So again, there is a reasonable level of resiliency built into the economy. There is no question about that. And the third element is the ability to avoid the shock altogether. This one is a little bit tricky because, you know, if we have a big hurricane and so on, there's always going to be upheaval. But I want to add another layer onto that. And it is the ability to be able to respond to the next one in a more capable way. So we went through some things, we learned some things, we grew out of those experiences, we used them as lessons for making changes and adjusting strategies. And so at the end of the day, when the next one comes, we are so much more capable. We have more growth. We have more resources. We have more institutional knowledge, institutions. We have less structural impediments to deal with within the economy. We have learned some things. So we have implemented some reforms and we are better off. That is where we are growing into resiliency. Yeah. Very important. It's the ability to build capacity for the future. And I want to tie this into a speech given. I talked about this on a show not too long. And as a matter of fact, it was a replay last week. So I'm not going to overcook this. But I think it's an important point to make that we have some individuals. We have individuals within our country who fully understand what the issues are and fully willing to speak to them. And I've spoken to them in very clear relief. But oftentimes, the problem is that we are listening for triggers. And if we don't hear those triggers, we are uninterested. And if we hear the trigger that we're looking for, we're no longer interested. So there was this speech given by the governor recently at the Nassau conference. And in that speech was a very, very big trigger. He said very clearly that the Bahamas, I want to, basically I'm paraphrasing, I want the country to understand, I want you, the persons who are in the audience, to understand that, look, the Bahamas debt is nowhere near in distress. That was a trigger. Because there are many persons and many arguments, especially given the fact that some of them were made by individuals who are external to the country. And a lot of commentators have made this argument that, you know, maybe the Bahamas is going to be in distress and maybe the Bahamas will have to have a structural adjustment program with the IMF. That was a trigger. And persons pulled from that speech, they ran with it and they left everything else, for the most part, on the table. But in the conclusion of that speech, the governor said something which I believe is so important, so valuable, so instructive, that we must pay attention to it. I have gotten in the habit these days of when I speak to persons, after the conversation, I either send them the speech or I point them to where the speech is and I say to them, take a very slow read. Because in the conclusion, and there's a lot which is in the speech, but like I said, I dealt with that in a show before and I replayed it last week. Don't want to go back over that. But in the conclusion of the speech, he said this: once the COVID rebound is completed, so once the good things that we're experiencing now is finished, the growth outlook is expected to reduce back in Bahamas' medium and long-term potential. The long-term potential. And I made the point when I did the show the week before that he did not say long-term experience. He said potential. In other words, the Bahamas is going to go back to grow at the level that the Bahamas is capable of growing based on all the things which currently exist in the economic arrangement of the Bahamas. So it's like you're a big sprinter. You can run very fast, and I put you in a metal toe shoes to run against an average sprinter. That individual is going to beat you. Why? Because you can only go as fast as your potential in that shoe. There are some things which are currently hamstrung in the Bahamas. Some iron toe shoes, which needs to be taken off such that the medium and longer term potential of the country can increase and expand. And it is into that era, into that growth, where we are going to find our deepest value in terms of resiliency. That is what I am speaking to. The governor goes on to say, hence, listen to this, hence, the policy challenge is to improve the medium-term growth potential. The problem that we are faced with as a country, the problem the government is faced with today, the problem policymakers are grappling with, or should be grappling with, or must grapple with, is the extent to which they can do things, make adjustments, implement reforms which are going to create medium-term growth potential. And again, it is into that space, it is in that place that we are going to discover, that we are going to find greater level of resilience. Why? Because as you grow, you have more resources. As you grow, we are better able to pay down the debt. As you grow, we need to take less taxes from individuals. As you grow, there's a greater standard of living. As you grow, household earn more. Households are now able to afford greater social service, greater social goods. They are able to afford greater education. They are able to send more children off to college. They're able to move out of generational poverty. As we grow, organizations and companies become more profitable. The economy therefore expands, and we now start to create a virtuous cycle into which additional growth can be made. And we can sit back and we can strategize to say, well, now that we have created an increased medium and longer term potential and we are working into that, let's now sit down and look at how we can further increase that potential, because really that's what it's about. We can move from a GDP of 12 or 13 billion and we can get to 15 and then we can get to 20. That's wisdom. And if we don't start to define our national conversations around the economy in those terms, so that they can sit squarely on those fundamentals, we're going to be in a spot of bother. Because if you're not fixing the real problem by first defining what the real issues are, there's not going to be viable solutions. And I don't think anyone is going to be envious of persons who are sitting in the seat of power at this point. It is not a, can be a comfortable moment for those persons. But to us within a country, I believe that this is a time when we must all rally behind the cause of the country. And the corollary to that is, I think this is a time when a rallying behind the cause of the country should be called for. This is almost a moment, a Kennedy moment in the United States when we go to the moon. So Bahamas, guess what? We are going to get to the place where we are going to solve the problems which ail the Bahamas economically, socially, and otherwise. And we are going to do it not because we have all of the answers today, but because we know that when we put our heads together, our collective genius can solve just about anything and everything that bothers us. We can. So you and I have a responsibility to rally behind that awareness. And the policymakers have, I think, an obligation to call us into that awareness. But that can only start by having a very open, honest, and transparent conversation of where we truly are today. It's fundamental. Absolutely, absolutely fundamental. We're going to take a break here, and when we come back, we're going to continue talking to the country and seeking to show how we can move forward, the things that we need to do to move forward. And the fact that, yes, some things look kind of hazy right now, but there's nothing you can do about what has happened. The question is, how will we respond to the things which have happened? You listen to The Essentials. I don't want you to move. You clearly won't call in, but I know that you're out there listening. Don't move. Come right back.
Always on the go? Missed the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Next Level Solutions. Next Level Solutions. Solutions. At Next Level Solutions, we assist companies and organizations to understand and strategically resolve governance, risk, compliance, regulatory, finance, and operational challenges, maximize their performance, and grow. Next Level Solutions, a dynamic consultancy built on experiential knowledge. For further details on our service offerings, visit NL Solutions Baham 376-8951. Next Level Solutions. Practical solutions delivered.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
Back to the essentials. I think we're having a good incursion, let me call it that. It's not a conversation. We're having a reasonable good incursion into the issues that we want to talk about, and that is economic resilience and the importance thereof for the Bahamas. I honestly believe that if you are a citizen or a resident, you just passing through and you really, really love the Bahamas, have great affection for the Bahamas, you would at this moment be sitting back, standing up, whatsoever it is, position you want to look at it from, but you will be paying attention. And I'm sure that you will be mulling certain questions. Now, the only reason I could find for you to be doing otherwise is if you have not allowed yourself to develop a reasonable understanding what these things mean. And by that, I mean, oftentimes, we allow extraneous issues. We allow ideology. We allow philosophical positions, we allow unnecessary bias to creep into the discussions, to creep into the assessments. And when they do, way too often, those things create tension, pressure on the things that we are discussing, exploring, analyzing, and narrows the scope of exploration so rapidly that we find ourselves left with the exact thing that we started out with, absolutely no solution, absolutely no path to go, absolutely no alternative way of thinking. And this is what I would like us to achieve by going through these things this evening. Not necessarily finding concrete solutions. I believe there's a lot of those around and a lot of persons who are smart enough to bring those to fruition. But importantly, I believe that we need to start to have a different way of thinking. We need to force ourselves to be more fulsome in our thinking, to grapple with uncomfortable realities, even when they trouble our closely held and well-guarded circumstances in a very, you know, even clinical way, difficult way. When we break into cold sweat, when we look at these things and consider these things and all we're seeing is, you know, red, we still have to grapple with them. And we must leave ourselves with sufficient objectivity to be able to reason through them. Because I honestly believe that if the psyche, if the national psyche, the national consciousness is holding these conversations at a particular level, they will naturally exert positive influence in places where they need to influence. There's no question about that. So when we sit down to have, all I'm saying to you is, here is maybe one way you used to look at it up to now, but here's another possibility. And it may not change your way of thinking radically, but if there is but one nugget that you can take away, then it may make your life better, my life better, because maybe you have a louder voice, a bigger platform, a more influential reality. And while I may say 10 words, your one word may carry so much further. But let's look at this issue of resilience. And I'm turning now to a World Economic Forum document, and one done in concert with the well-known consulting company, McKinsey. And it says here that the stakes in developing resilience is as an essential capability are high. It's not a simple matter. It's not an easy matter. The stakes are significantly high. But then it goes on to say that there's an expectation of growth at various levels over the next year or so. And it is going to be dependent on how leaders respond to many challenges, including climate change, energy transition, supply chain disruption, healthcare availability, and income, gender, and racial inequalities. Against this environment of continuous disruption and uncertainty, sufficient investments in new capabilities are required to build new resilience muscle. And in a way, this is the same thing I've been saying earlier, that we cannot simply recover, but we have to find ways of how we can invest in expanding our capabilities for the future. That becomes very tricky when our ability and scope to invest is curtailed by some other pressures on the other side of the scale, i.e. maybe our debt, i.e. by hurricanes, i.e. We don't have sufficient space, fiscal space in terms of taking in revenue. These things create pressure on the ability to carry out these desirable policy positions, if they are policy positions, but certainly from a global perspective, these desirable move forward for countries. It talks about the experience as taught us important lessons in terms of meeting the challenges going forward. So we have to be able to manage disruption and move into the future. But we also have to evolve through the process of the crisis. COVID came and taught us a lot of things we didn't know about ourselves. And it also forced us to accept some things that we knew, but may have kind of drifted away from, not wanting to acknowledge. But one of the things that it points out here is that inadequate responses and unpreparedness can magnify the damage of a crisis. Inadequate responses and unpreparedness can magnify the damage of the crisis. Where the Bahamas is at this point in time, as it relates to unpreparedness, if we weren't prepared, we weren't prepared. We already felt the effect of that. The responses, though, is not simply when we are in the midst of the crisis, but the responses continues thereafter. So right now, right here, as we speak, there are responses which are required to deal with some of the ill effects of the COVID crisis, to deal with the effects of the fiscal, financial, global financial crisis that came along with that. And so we have work to do. We have to put in that level of work if we are going to ensure that we get to the level where for the future, we can build buffers against these vulnerabilities which exist and for the shocks which will come. We also have to recognize that these crises, because we are facing multiple ones at this point in time, that's why it's so especially dynamic and very, very, very uncertain. They disproportionately affect vulnerable segments of the society. So even as we talk about recovery, even as some persons are getting back on their feet and doing better, there are some persons who still haven't dug themselves out from behind zero. And we always have to be mindful of that. So how are we going to solve this? We have to pay attention to the statements of the governor. We have to pay attention to where does our growth potential currently lies and how do we fix and expand and extend that? How do we build this resiliency muscle? The document says here, resilience muscle importantly enables in a country here. It talks about organization, but I'm substituting that with country. But it importantly enables organization to orient towards quality growth, supporting climate goals and inclusive growth, helping to ensure that the crises do not widen equality gaps. So economic equality, gender equality, equality of education, equality in terms of access to food, access to housing, access, I said education before, access to the things which we need in life to advance as individuals and to get to that place where an article which I'm currently, I've recently written and a portion has been published already, where the Prime Minister speaks about the economic dignity of individuals. We have to be mindful that these things happen. They are not through a significant crisis. So how do we ensure that we build the resilience muscle to grapple with them and to surpass them? Because grappling is not enough. To get back to where we were isn't enough. It's nowhere near enough. Because where we were, if we have been truthful, we had problems. They may not have been magnified. Like you said, a crisis usually magnify these things. But where we were, we had significant challenges. All of the structural impediments and the need for reforms and so on, most of those are pre-COVID, pre-crisis. And so we have to work to build this resilience muscle cooperatively. So cooperative means that all of us in the country need to come together. all persons in the political divide, on the opposition, in the ruling party, have to come together. The private sector and the public sector have to come together. Civil society have to come together and play a role in this. This is the only way we are going to solve these problems in such a way, greater resilience going forward. Now, we can solve them otherwise, such that some persons are okay, and some persons will be fine, and some persons will be richer. But that's not what it's about. Resiliency, at the core of resiliency, is this idea of inclusive growth. And inclusive growth there suggests that all of us must grow at all strata of society. So the very rich, the ultra rich, is going to grow. They always do. But for there to be inclusive growth, that at every strata below them, all the way down to, you know, as persons like to refer to them, grassroots, there is an experience of growth at those levels. That's only way the country is going to move forward, because remember that a country at the end of the day is only going to be, the economy is only going to be the sum total of the capacity of the individual entities within it, the individual companies, the individual persons. And so to the extent that you grow as an individual and I grow as an individual, we are collectively stronger. We have to be mindful, as the document states, that wealth creation becomes meaningful when it elevates the standing of the most vulnerable and poorer population at all developmental stage. Without sustained social advancement, societies are less resilient and secure. I want to say that again. Without sustained social advancement, societies are less resilient and secure. The point here is, don't let us just focus on bringing the Bahamas back. Don't let us just focus on getting to that 13 billion or 14 billion on a macro level without impacting at a micro level the vulnerable population, the struggling company, all companies at all levels. Because wealth creation, when it becomes concentrated in only a small grouping, the economy, the society is less resilient. You may ask why? Because if all of the two Mr. Bigs or five Mr. Bigs over here are ultra, super ultra rich people over there, and the government sitting here in the middle, especially given the tax arrangement in the Bahamas, can't take any more tax from the ultra bigs over there, but have to support the very vulnerable, which has grown in size and quantity, the country is going to struggle. The fiscal circumstances of the country is still going to be in a spot of bother, because the fiscal space of the government remains contained, which is really what Moody's is saying. Moody's is saying that we're facing some liquidity risk. Liquidity risk basically say, liquidity risk refers to the ability to pay all of your obligations without running out of money. If you have a liquidity risk, it is saying that before you finish paying all of your obligations, you are going to be out of funds. So consider that we make progress in these circumstances as we currently are. We make progress. The money flows to only a certain grouping, and the government now has to find more, even as it is already challenged. It still have to find way more because the money is flowing away and the more vulnerable people, the vulnerable people are getting even more so vulnerable. The poor is getting poorer. And so the social safety nets, the social security infrastructure have to be expanded. That is going to put us in a spot of bother. So again, defining growth is not just any old growth. Yet it's not just any old growth in the long, long term. It's the quality of the growth. And the quality of the growth here must be defined by the extent to which it touches the most persons, the greater masses. That is important. That's fundamentally important for us to get to the place where we have true deep resiliency. Leaders need to decide when inaction has become more costly than preventative action. Leaders need to decide when inaction has become more costly than preventative action. Now, in the Bahamas and many places in the world, we have a term for that: kicking the can down the road. Leaders have to decide when the moment has come to stop kicking the can down the road, because that strategy, that action is just absolutely way more costly than taking the time, feeling the burn, dealing with the pressures, and fixing the issues now so that tomorrow is going to be better. That's what it is. That's what this is really about. How are we going to change our fortunes as a country? And you may propose to me that we could. Well, we can have that conversation. I can re-propose to you that we're not bad, but we have some work to do. We're not bad, but there is more that can be done. We are not bad, but we are faced with some pressures and some risks which could really change that conversation in important ways. So one of the things that we need to see is a resilience framework. As we talk about moving to resiliency, we need a resilience framework which by design, I'm reading from the document, foster the cooperation of public and private sector organizations in supporting sustainability and inclusiveness across society. Again, it can't be on one side. It can't be just on the government. Everybody have to come to bear on this. For society, resilience both enables and depends on meaningful economic growth, emphasizing improved quality of life, equality, and inclusiveness. That's really where we are. That's really the things that we need to focus on. So as you listen to me this evening, I want you to walk away with this in mind. Resilience should be seen as the ability to deal with adversity, withstand shocks, and continuously adapt and accelerate as disruptions and crises arise over the hits, bounce back, and keep getting better for the next one. And better, and better. Because if there is no growth, if there is not deep quality growth, which is touching everyone in a significant way at all socioeconomic levels, ultimately society is going to be weakened and resiliency is not going to be optimized. We're going to leave it there for tonight. You've been listening to The Essentials. We always end by saying, do not allow your unwillingness to change harm your greatness. It actually goes differently. Do not allow your greatness to become a victim of your unwillingness to change. All that's left to say is be good, walk good, behave yourself, contribute to the country, find a way how you can contribute to the change in the national conversations. One love and Ubuntu. Good night.
Essentials. You know it's so.